We are the Borg. Existence as you know it is now over. Lower your shields and prepare to receive the transmission of Treknologic. You will listen as the crew of the USS Relativity reviews episodes of Star Trek for your entertainment. You will be assimilated. Resistance is futile.
Hey, everyone. You are listening to Treknologic, where we review Star Trek episodes and enjoy Trek trivia aboard the Federation timeship USS Relativity. This is Treknologic number 150 for Stardate 2014.187. Today, we'll be reviewing the Voyager episode, Eye of the Needle.
Tell the crew to prepare personal messages and have them ready within the hour.
That signal is being transmitted at exactly the same frequency and amplitude as our signal. It's a response.
Spinach juice with a touch of pear, please. Tom Paris introduced me to it. It's very nutritious.
I'm sure.
You'll have to reconfigure the matter transmission rate.
Fairly substantially.
And we risk losing whatever we try to beam out.
We'll have to run a series of tests first. There's no one back home who's going to care one way or another whether I'm alive.
Mike, if wormholes can cross through time, shouldn't we be tracking all of them? How does that even happen?
Well, as we've seen before, with most wormholes, one or both of the ends can be unstable and change location. But when one of them gets old enough that it begins to degrade, the shifting energies can cause the ends to instead become kind of unstuck in time. It's really rare for it to happen and pretty dangerous because, you know, the other end could shift any time to any other location in time, space and time. So it's not really a safe way of traveling in time. I mean, we do track them when we find them, though, sir.
Okay, so this is what some of our missions are about, then, to go and find these things and destroy them.
Well, it's slowly destroying itself. You don't really have to destroy it.
Wow. All right, Bill, I know I've asked you to do some pretty tricky piloting tricks. However, I really do not want you to try to fly the ship through a 30-centimeter wormhole, okay?
Oh, but I just got this great compression technology from Raxacor Calipatoripus, and I really wanted to try it out. I modified it to the ship and everything. Really? All right. Well, I mean, I could do it, man. I can do it.
I'm uncompressible.
It sounds good.
I'm like water.
Yeah, it'd be like water, man.
Yeah, no.
Be the cup. Be the cup. No, this is a real no-go. Am I getting vetoed all around?
Yes.
No one's ever done it before. Think about the advances. All right, fine.
We'll set you up in a shuttle.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
After the review.
Yeah. Just make sure it's not the Delta Flyer.
Gary, what happens to the... You know, I don't know. I'd like to kind of see you as a salamander.
No. Yeah, hopefully that wormhole doesn't go to warp 10.
Yeah.
Or fake warp 10. Mythic warp 10.
All right, Gary, what happens to the Romulan captain seems pretty coincidental. Are we responsible for that as part of our job?
So you think that we go back in time... kill somebody slowly so that they die 4 years before they actually give the information or could give the information to the families back home?
Oh, slowly sounds good.
No. We don't have to do that.
But we don't even have to kill the guy.
It's kind of funny that now, you know, Tom Paris can't find anything out about his parents.
Well, all we really have to do is corrupt the Romulan population database file that Tuvok's looking at.
Oh, so what you're saying is the messages actually get home, but now we've depressed the entire Voyager crew by making them think it didn't happen?
Yeah, and then we just, like, you know, the Romulan guy doesn't have to die. We just have to be persuasive. Don't send the messages.
Oh, see, I thought you said we would send the messages and then just depress the Voyager crew.
Well, that sounds like fun.
That does sound awfully Captain Chris.
All right, let's get on to the review and find out what Voyager tries to cram through Ensign Kim's wormhole.
This is the one where we learn why Harry Kim never, ever gets promoted.
Story is by Hilary Bader, while the teleplay was by Jerry Taylor. It was directed by Winrich Kolbe and originally aired on February 20th, 1995. Geos ranks this episode 50th of 171 episodes.
Okay, so the plot concept of this episode was originally pitched by Hilary Bader, and she'd been an intern on Star Trek The Next Generation. The writing staff of Voyager immediately wanted to buy the pitch. They thought it was great. You know, executive producer Jerry Taylor commented, "Hilary Bader has given us a lot of wonderful stories. That story was one of the early ones we bought. This episode was ultimately the only one of Voyager scripts in which Bader, you know, was involved." And although Jerry Taylor had written Caretaker, the Voyager pilot episode, with you know, Michael Piller and Rick Berman, this is the first Voyager teleplay that she wrote, you know, on her own, you know, without being credited as a co-writer, as the only writer. That's pretty cool, right? So the episode was originally formatted as a teaser and five acts. However, Jerry Taylor had known by the time she arrived at her office in Paramount Pictures at 7 a.m. in the morning on Monday, 5 December 1994, that the series would be changed to a new four-act format. So she was under the impression that this alteration would affect all regular episodes of the series, which had not yet debuted. So she consequently spent the morning reformatting this script, you know, so there's a teaser in three acts.
Wow.
Four acts, yeah. And then, okay, so speaking about her, yeah, this is all, by the way, this edition of Trivia is all about the script writing process. speaking about her experience of writing this episode, Taylor noted, "I love writing people shows and the building of this arc between Janeway and the Romulan commander, which began with complete doubt, skepticism, and weariness, and all those Romulan things. In a sense, by a long distance, that built into a relationship and closeness and almost a friendship. The idea that by the end, he was almost our champion was a lot of fun." And of how the episode ended up, Taylor opined, "The show was fully realized, one of those shows that had a little bit of everything." And one thing I just wanted to point out is, like, in addition to the relationship between the Romulan commander and Janeway, there was a lot of relationship building going on between Harry Kim and B'Elanna Torres in this episode. And we sort of get – Kim sort of personifies, you know, everyone who wants to get home, whereas B'Elanna is like, well, there's no one – as you heard in the opening clip, there's no one back home who gives – you know, care about whether I live or die. So it created some really interesting interplay between the two of them, and I think really served to help create the bond of friendship amongst the crew, even with the characters who are off screen for this.
Yeah.
Ensign Kim detects a wormhole that the crew hopes leads to the Alpha Quadrant. Good news! It does! Bad news! It's microscopic. Well, they say it's microscopic, but it's 30 centimeters.
Yeah.
Too small for the ship to navigate through. However, they deploy a microprobe, and though it gets stuck in a gravitational eddy, they are able to establish subspace communications with a Romulan science vessel on the other side. The Romulan captain is extremely skeptical. He believes Voyager is spying on his ship from the Alpha Quadrant. He breaks communication and runs tests while Voyager hits redial constantly, hoping he'll pick up. When his tests are complete, he's confirmed that Voyager's signal did originate in the Delta Quadrant. Captain Janeway is awakened when he finally picks up the phone.
Kim to Captain Janeway.
Janeway here.
Captain, we've got him back. The Romulan.
Good work. Put him through to my quarters. This is Captain Janeway.
This is the cargo vessel Talbot.
Thank you for answering our hail, Captain. What is your name? How may I address you?
I'd prefer not to give my name.
Very well. I understand that you must have been skeptical when I told you where we are. I hope you've been able to verify our position.
My analysis of your hailing frequency seems to indicate that it originates in the Delta Quadrant. But I am not precluding the possibility that you've been able to create that illusion somehow.
To what end?
I'm not sure, but that doesn't negate the possibility.
How can I assure you of my truthfulness?
You say you are a Federation ship. Are you a Starfleet vessel?
Yes, we are.
And your mission in the Delta Quadrant?
Our mission was originally in the Alpha Quadrant. We were pulled against our will to our present location. Now we're trying to get home.
Aren't you, in fact, Starfleet spies on a surveillance mission?
Captain, I understand your concern. Naturally, the Romulan Empire doesn't want Starfleet spying on its science vessels. But since we're 70,000 light years from Romulan space, and a subspace message to Starfleet would take years, I think you have to admit that we can't be much of a threat to you. You have nothing to fear from us.
Soothing words, Captain. But they are only words.
If we were spies, we wouldn't be asking what I'm going to ask you now. We have no way of communicating with Starfleet, with our friends and families. We're hoping you might be able to relay a message for us. Our crew is not large. Each of them could write a short personal message. You'd be welcome to read them all before passing them on. I think you'd be convinced that they're nothing more than the heartfelt words of some very lonely people.
Captain, it would ease my apprehension if I could see that you are who you say you are. I have a signal amplifier on board. I've been working to reconfigure the protocols to penetrate the radiation stream of the wormhole. I think it might be possible to establish a visual link between us.
I have no objection. When that's done, will you help us?
I make no promises. Let us proceed one step at a time. Have your officers contact me in order to attempt the visual link. Good night.
Good night.
So in this first clip, we've learned that they get hold of the Romulan, and he, of course, thinks they're spies. And
naturally.
Why wouldn't he? Because he's a spy.
Right.
Yeah.
And I like how she says, well, we're no threat, really. There's no threat at all from us. We'll have these personal messages that, you know, you can read and pass on.
Right.
But the Romulan should probably think that maybe they could be coding that. I mean, if he's going to jump to every weird, bizarre conclusion about them being spies, pretending they're in the Delta Quadrant, why wouldn't he think that they were going to just send home coded messages using the Romulans and making them look like fools?
Well, but good remember, point. The Romulans are way better than the humans, so they're going to already figure out any coding that the humans are going to try to send through, so...
Dude, he seemed impressed that they might be, like, pretending to be in the Delta Quadrant.
We find out the reason for that way later, but...
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, the Romulans, you know, have a little bit of an ego problem.
And a trust issue.
Yes.
Right.
I find this premise very interesting. I like the idea of a... minimally sized wormhole where they really can't just travel through it.
Yeah. It seems like there'd be a lot more of that in space than the other. Tiny wormholes, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what season was this?
First season, fifth episode.
Oh, see, first season.
So if they got through it, that'd be the end of the series.
Right. It would have.
So we know they're not going to get through it.
Right.
You know, we know that this is going to fail. That's right. You know, we know that there's a tragedy from the get-go here. Like, even if they do figure out, like, well, as we will see, they get some ideas on how they might be able to traverse this tiny wormhole. But we know it's going to fail because we're only five episodes into what we know is going to be a 23-episode season or whatever. So.
Although, I do have to say, you know, for the fifth episode in, this was actually a really big episode for Ensign Kim. He got some cool stuff. He got a lot of screen time. This early in the series, it gives you hope that he might actually be kind of a good character as it goes along.
Yes.
True.
And it makes more sense that he's green at this point.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
The fact that he was green 7 years from now.
Yeah, it's... And like never got that promotion.
Yeah, he never gets a promotion because this doesn't work. And we all know that if something doesn't work... Give up and never try it again.
Right.
They probably called him Micro Kim for the rest of his series.
And I'm not sure if they really... I lost my thought.
Sorry. It's just too early in the day.
You were going to say something nice about Kim.
You need another Ractogino, man.
I do. All right.
Moving on. The heck with it.
They establish the visual communications link, and ultimately, Taurus realizes that she can piggyback a transporter beam onto it. Alpha Quadrant, here we come.
I'm afraid I can't permit that, Captain. My government would never allow Starfleet personnel on this ship. I wouldn't want my logs to show that activity.
Dadgummit!
I'll volunteer to transport to your ship and back again. If the procedure is successful, I'll arrange for a troop ship to join me. That would easily accommodate your crew.
Okay. Does this sound like to anyone else as though the Voyager crew is being invited to spend some time in a Romulan prison camp?
You know? I got a troop ship coming.
Yeah.
Hey, no problem.
It's got plenty of brigs on it.
Meanwhile, in the B plot, Kes, who is studying medicine under the tutelage of the EMH, is concerned that no one is treating the doctor as if he were a real person, as a member of the crew. Janeway points out that his bedside manner is so bad that...
We've been talking about reprogramming him.
You can do that? It doesn't seem right.
Kes, he's only a hologram.
He's your medical officer. He's alive.
No, he's not.
He's self-aware. He's communicative. He has the ability to learn.
Because he's been programmed to do that.
So because he's a hologram, he doesn't have to be treated with respect or any consideration at all.
Moved by their conversation, Janeway takes a meeting with the doctor.
Computer, initiate emergency medical holographic program.
Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
There is no emergency, Doctor.
Oh, that's good. I was right in the middle of preparing a culture to test Lieutenant Hargrove for Orethian flu when Ensign Kyoto deactivated me.
I'm sure she didn't realize you were busy.
What is it you wanted, Captain?
Actually, I thought we might just...
talk for a moment.
About what?
Doctor, you were originally programmed to serve in a limited fashion during an emergency. Now you're being asked to do much more.
That's certainly true. I'm providing full-time medical service for the entire ship's crew, functioning as both doctor and nurse, and now as an instructor as well.
You don't have the luxury of thinking of yourself as an emergency medical program anymore. You've become a full-fledged member of the crew.
I see. Are you suggesting that I be reprogrammed?
No. I'm asking if there's anything I can do to help you.
Help me?
If there's anything you need or want, I'd like to see that you get it.
What I'd like is to be turned off when people leave. I spend hours here with absolutely nothing to do. When someone does remember to deactivate me, they do so without asking if it's convenient. It's extremely irritating.
What if I gave you control over your deactivation sequence?
I beg your pardon?
I'm sure we can make it possible for you to turn yourself off, or to prevent being turned off.
I might like that.
I'll have someone look into it. Anything else?
I'm not sure. I'll have to give it some thought.
You do that.
So I just want to say, this is the most important thing Kes ever did.
Yeah, you're always down on her, and look what she did.
I know!
Right. She stood up for the rights of holograms, bro.
I mean, that's exactly what this is. This is like the start of holograms being accepted as sentient beings.
And so it all, and is you, she your and, hero?
No.
Do you guys like have a statue, a holographic statue to Kes, like somewhere?
How many holographic children are named Kes?
Oh, there are probably way too many.
Yeah.
I thought that was your last name.
No, it's not. Oh. But yes, this was actually a pretty cool thing. I loved the captain's face when Kes said, so, because he's a hologram, people can just treat him like garbage, basically. And she was like, oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah, he is the chief medical officer.
Yeah, exactly.
And my favorite thing is, he has a horrible bedside manner. So, we're going to reprogram him.
Yes.
How many crew members would they actually go and reprogram just because they had a horrible demeanor?
Yeah.
Well, you might fire someone for being incompatible with the rest of the crew.
Okay, I will admit that his program was more limited at this point than it was before.
Yes.
He definitely grew, and they always talked about him reformatting his own programming or with the help of other people.
Yes.
And so it's interesting because he literally reinvents himself in many ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
And wouldn't that be nice just to automatically add some knowledge to your program? Although he's always concerned, you know, he has limited resources.
Yes.
So he can't take the entire computer of the Voyager.
Right.
Yeah, he was unlike limited Mike. That way.
Right, Mike?
Yep. Yeah, I do take the whole thing. Well, but that's because that's my job.
Except for the showers, right?
The showers don't need programming, so no, thankfully.
I have it programmed to the right temperature.
Yes, but that's, you know, a little unit that's built right into it. It's not actually part of the ship systems.
Phew. Yeah.
Why, I told why you, never to call me on this wall. This is an unlisted wall.
But that's why we have that. That's why our plumber is like, you know, a lieutenant. We can't mess around with the showers.
I really like this whole sentience thing that goes on throughout a lot of Voyager. And you'd think that at some point with Janeway being a scientist, she certainly would have reviewed the data case. And maybe I'm not knowledgeable enough in Voyager, but maybe one of our fans can help. Did they ever bring up data in reference to the doctor?
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, if they did, it would probably be the you know, the court case where Data right. gets his sentience. And my guess is that, you know, the doctor would bring it up to make a point. But this is just speculation. I can't cite a specific memory. And I did watch this show pretty regularly throughout its original run.
Right. I mean, it seems like something that the doctor would have looked into when he started realizing that he right. was not just a program.
Right.
Or maybe he wanted to make his own argument, but it's always been very interesting to watch this happen, because it's something I feel that we'll eventually have to deal with.
Yeah.
In the real world.
Yeah. Yeah, probably right. this type before actually the data type.
Oh, yeah.
Because computers, I think, are going to become sentient before we have androids.
Hard to tell. Japan has some of those androids that really look creepy.
Yeah.
Faces.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Those. Oh, yeah, I don't even like accessing that data.
All right. Kes continues her medical studies at a remarkable pace.
I suspect you have an eidetic memory.
I just want to make a point. I don't think they ever talked about that again.
I don't think so either.
It's like, if you give her something, let her keep it.
Yes.
And I thought she was pretty good in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I think anybody who saw the doctor treated that way, who was kind of put in that position, would have done the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't think B'Elanna would have.
And apparently nobody else on the crew did either. They sort of set it up like Kes is the only one saying, hey, don't ignore him. He's talking to you about your broken bones, you dummy.
Well, to be fair, Kes spent time in there where she's not the patient.
Yes.
That's true.
When you're a patient, you're focused on yourself.
It hurts. Ah, it hurts. Although I could see if B'Elanna was in there as the second person, she would have been like, why are you talking to me? He's the one that has to fix you.
Yes.
That's right. I'm sure she would have. I mean, and that's really like just put out kind of way. Like,
yes.
I'm the engineer. He's the doctor. Talk to him. I can't fix your leg.
this hypo spanner is not going to help you.
Yeah, that's
but I can
it.
Stick it into you if you want.
Keep bugging me, and I will stick it into you.
That's right.
When she tells the doctor of the plan to beam to the Alpha Quadrant, we learn that his program is fully integrated into the ship's medical systems. He won't be making the journey. He has but one request.
Could I ask a favor of you?
Anything.
If you do leave, before you go, would you check to make sure I've been deactivated?
I promise.
The Romulan successfully transports aboard. There's just one problem.
My congratulations on your remarkable accomplishment. This is an astonishing breakthrough.
For a while there, I didn't think you were going to make it. There was a strange phase variance in the radiation stream. It almost kept us from pulling you through.
Mr. Tuvok, you may begin evacuation procedures.
I suggest we delay that for the moment, Captain. I'm afraid I found the reason for the unusual phase variance.
What is it?
Captain, what year is it?
What year?
If you please.
By your calendar, the year is 2351.
But this is 2371.
Exactly. Our Romulan visitor is a person out of time. He's showing clear evidence of temporal displacement. I would surmise that the wormhole is a rift, not just in space, but in time. The unusual phase variance we detected was actually an indication of a temporal shift. We have transported him from 20 years in the past to our present.
I've gone over and over the transporter logs. There's no question that if we try to transport ourselves through that wormhole, we'll end up 20 years in the past.
Then let's do it. It's better than spending the next 70 years trying to get back.
How can we do that? We'd be going back to a time when you were only 2 years old.
Oh, you're disappointed, Harry. We all are. It seemed we were so close. But clearly we can't go back. It would pollute the timeline to such an extent that the consequences would be unimaginable. I'm afraid we'll have to send you back alone and ask that you not reveal anything that has happened here.
I can assure you, Captain, that I would not do anything that might contaminate the future and perhaps harm the Romulan Empire. But in 20 years, I could alert Starfleet not to launch the mission which sent you here.
I'm afraid that's not possible either. We've already had a huge impact on this quadrant. People and events here would be drastically affected.
I'm afraid we're left with our original request. In 20 years, would you relay our personal messages to Starfleet?
Of course. At the proper time, I will transmit them. If you should find a way back within my lifetime, I'd be an old man, but I would welcome a message from you. I am Telek Ramor of the Romulan Astrophysical Academy.
I promise you'll hear from us. Because we will get back.
These are our messages.
I wish you luck on your journey.
And I thank you for your help.
And so there you have it. You know, one of the things that is even in like Doctor Who, where they travel through space and time, you know, it's always referred to as space and time, but you know, it's actually space time. So
right.
It's all one thing. So personally, I can't say I'm surprised what happened. I think any Einstein-Rosen-Bridge would in fact probably traverse through time as well, because it's going through space. So therefore it's going through space time.
Yes.
So, It's not a huge shock that this is what happened to me, but
no, but it was an excellent, you know, glitch in the story.
Yeah, and then it's like, because you know, you're kind of wondering, like you said at the beginning, you know it's going to fail, so you're wondering what is it, what happens, what went wrong,
right? Because
you know it's almost like you're reviewing, because you know it's going to go wrong, you know. So there you have it, and the shoe drops, and it's like, oh man. And Janeway says it sums it all up for everyone. It's like, we were so close.
Yeah.
It seemed as though we were so close. But I mean, you know, as a Starfleet officer, I do have to respect their respect for maintaining the timeline in which we all exist at the moment.
Well,
of course, the Alpha Quadrant is a huge place too. And we know they can be put into stasis. So why they didn't go through and hide out in stasis, I don't know.
Because they would be going through to become captives of the Romulan Empire 20 years earlier. And the Romulans would know they were from the future, and they would get the grilling of a lifetime for every piece of information from the future that they could possibly get.
Yeah. I mean, that was the other thing. It's like, start evacuation procedures. It's like, really? You want to go over there just to get onto a Romulan troop ship? I mean, I'm not totally up on my Romulan Federation policy and posture history from this time period, but it was never pleasant, right? I mean, this isn't like, you know, it's not like the president of the Federation is meeting with a Romulan ambassador to try to broker a peace while the Klingons are in shambles. You know, this is like everyday Cold War Romulan Empire stuff. And it's like, all right, we can get back to the Alpha Quadrant, but we have to be captives of the Romulans. I just wouldn't go, yay!
Well, I would be celebrating
that maneuver. I'd be like, you know what, Captain? I'm going to stay here on the ship.
Actually, in the beginning of Next Generation, weren't the Romulans kind of withdrawn and we haven't heard from them in a while?
Yeah.
Right.
So this was in their kind of big secret period of rebuilding their empire or whatever, you know, building these giant Romulan warbirds that they have now.
Right.
Because remember, those were much bigger than the Enterprise.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Those things were epic in like awe-inspiring and fear. But, you know, those things are built to make you crap your pants, frankly. You know, like, oh my, OMG! Who the Romulans? Wow, you had these little dinky warbirds before that we were able to just kind of, you know, shoot a spread pattern on, and we got you. But this thing, holy moly.
And it's mostly hollow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's got like like a bird. Yeah, and it's got a quantum singularity drive, too. It's like, what? What?
Yeah.
They are playing with some heavy-duty stuff.
So this was during their secret time.
Right.
And, yeah, you got to imagine that they would have just put them on the rack and started stretching them.
Absolutely. And say, you know, every kind of tactical advantage from the future that they could get. And as it was, they did quite a good job without future knowledge.
Yes.
So.
And yeah, I have to say for...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
For all of the close calls we get where they almost make it home, I really like the way this one was done because they really couldn't go. They would have been just out of luck. I mean, the possibility was there. It didn't get snapped away from them at the last second by some bumbling idiot or something. It just was they just couldn't use it.
Right.
Yeah. It wasn't viable.
So do you think they would ever really give the people their messages?
I think he would have, because I don't know that after meeting them and going through all that, he would actually tell the Romulan government that he had them.
I don't know. I thought he did.
And the government killed him? Or, see, that's even better.
Oh, yeah?
He takes the messages, says, in 20 years, I'll give them to Starfleet. Then he gives them to his government, and his government fakes his death.
But they waited a long time to fake his death.
Yeah.
Oh, but I guess that was all part of the plan. Well, here's the thing. He's concerned about a transporter log showing Starfleet officers arriving on his vessel.
Right.
So... But his transporter log is going to show him transporting out of his ship into, like, nowhere.
A wormhole.
And he's like, they're going to be like, what? Where did you go? Well, I was on this Starfleet vessel from the future. We want to know everything. Of course you do. I'm here to tell you everything. What's that in your hand? Oh, that's just a memory stick with their personal messages on it. You what? I know. It could be great.
I transported to the Delta Quadrant.
Are you kidding me? He's holding a memory stick from 20 years in the future. That alone... could spark a huge change in technology.
But they could have replicated a memory chip with 20-year-old technology.
Maybe they did, because it looked kind of
Think they would have. I don't think they would have given him anything that was future technology.
That's a good point.
Well, so it would have been cool if the Romulan commander had actually survived, because wouldn't that have been neat to see him 7 years later, you know, as a Romulan envoy, because he worked towards that in his career, and he showed up when the Voyager came there.
That would have been cool.
That would have been a nice little rounding out of
the series. Or even if he was, even if he was involved in the episode where they, where
Barkley?
Barkley sets up communication. All I could think of was broccoli. Thank you, Captain.
No more nicknames. No more nicknames.
Yeah, where Barkley set up the communication, you know, if he was like there helping him, that would have been cool.
Yeah. Well, you can't say they didn't try to get word home. Unfortunately, Tuvok has a copy of a Romulan population database.
I'm sorry to report. Dr. Ramore died in 2367.
That was 4 years ago.
And that is correct. Before he would have sent our messages.
Maybe he left a will, telling someone else to transmit the messages. Or he could have given our computer chip to the Romulan government.
It is possible. Unfortunately, there is no way to know.
Wow. Buzzkill. As routine returns to the Voyager, the doctor is treating the same crewman who ignored him by speaking only to Kes early in this episode. This time around, she ignores the crewman, giving the doctor opportunity to lay down the law.
I tried a new hamstring exercise. Maybe I overdid it. But my workouts are about all that stand between me and a severe case of cabin fever.
Lieutenant, I am the chief medical officer of this ship. If you have something to say to me, please direct this statement to me.
Well, you see, I need to work out.
I'm not telling you not to work out. I'm suggesting you use a modicum of common sense when you do it. If I see you in here again for an exercise-related injury, I'll have to discuss the matter with your superior officer.
Yes, sir.
You're fine now. You may leave.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
I don't think he'll make the mistake of ignoring you again.
Captain Janeway has made me realize that I must function as more than an emergency medical replacement. I must think of myself as a member of the crew.
You're absolutely right.
I've prepared a list of things I'd like to see added to sick bay. Perhaps you could present it to the captain?
I'd be happy to.
There's one more request. Something of a personal nature. I would like a name.
Very sweet. But I like, as we look at the whole of Voyager, how he made the doctor his name.
Well, he did actually get a name later.
Well, a couple of times, right? Yes. He wanted his creator's name for a while.
Right.
And then he got the name that the Vidian gave him.
Right.
That he loved.
Which was a horrible name. It was like Schmullis or something.
Or Schlum.
But he realized that that wasn't him.
Right.
And so it's amazing that there's actually two characters named Doctor who I really like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is cool.
And they are night and day different.
Yes.
Yeah, it'd be great to do a mashup where, you know, it's like David going, I'm the Doctor. I'm the Doctor. Yeah. You know, like, you could cut them back and forth, you know, like just like little phrases, like back and forth between these two. That'd be great.
Right.
But I think that's interesting because he sees the name as a part of an identity that everybody has, and that at this point, early in his program, you might say, he doesn't have that identity of himself yet.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think he's trying to define that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, well, I think that's what he's always trying to do. And it's interesting you say that it evolves over the course of the series as he evolves. So does his name. It's cool. It's a good part of it's one of the better parts of Voyager, I think, in terms of character development. Because you have so much to develop with this guy.
I like these multi-year character developments.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the exact opposite with Kim.
Yeah.
You got a regression?
Yeah, multi-year character regression.
It seems like it sometimes, because he seemed competent here.
Well, he does save the ship from being frozen at some point, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think that's older Kim.
Yeah.
You mean who travels back in time.
Oh, so it takes him like... Oh, wow. Takes him a long time to get his act together.
Maybe I think so. That was Kim and Chakotay, I think. So anyway, yeah, no, actually, this episode was pretty interesting. It was not a action-adventure episode.
No.
No, not at all.
But it kept my interest.
Yeah, it's very much a conversation episode.
We're getting a little bit into ratings, so why don't we move on to our name meanings, episode name meanings.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, Carrie?
You want just the general?
Yeah, what does it mean?
Well, we all know the eye of the needle is a really tiny thing. And getting through the eye of the needle, I don't know if you've ever tried sewing, but if you try sewing and you have that little tiny thread that is smaller than the diameter of the eye of the needle, it's really hard to get that thread through it because it's so small.
Oh, and that's why the Romulan had to do his side, because he was that weird little triangle-shaped piece of metal that you stick through the hole.
Yes.
Only people that sew are going to know what that means.
All right, so did the writer just not know what the metric system was and didn't realize that 30 centimeters is a lot bigger than the eye of a needle?
Wait, I have this.
It's certainly not microscopic.
Yeah.
Wait. It's almost not microscopic unless you define your system as the quadrant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, on a galactic scale, it could be maybe considered microscopic.
On a quadrant scale, it's microscopic. I can see that. That makes sense, yeah.
Because, I mean, there's 30 centimeters, that's the size of a magazine.
Yeah, it's almost a foot wide. There's a biblical meaning. The Jesus at one point said it's easier for a rich man to get through the eye of a needle than it is to enter the kingdom of heaven. I don't know, just throwing that out there.
But it's a very, very tough thing to do.
Yeah.
And they didn't have those little triangles of metal.
That's right.
And they didn't have transporter technology.
Right.
All right. German episode name.
They don't get home.
Well, but too many of them would be named that.
Right. They don't get home, colon. It's a time trap.
Yeah.
Hope and their meaning of life are crushed.
20 years in the past, hope dies. Hope dies 20 years.
Oh, I got it. Schadenfreude in person.
All right. Clickbait episode name.
Look at Ensign Kim's wormhole.
Right.
What's up with Kim's wormhole?
What's up, Ensign Kim's wormhole?
I think the beginning, what else can we cram into the wormhole?
Yeah.
Was a good one.
Ensign Kim finds a hole in space. You'll never guess what he puts in it.
Top 20 things to put into a so-called microscopic wormhole. Number 4 will change your life.
Oh, yeah. I'm about to unsubscribe from Upworthy just because of
this. I know.
Freaking clickbait names.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hold on. This is messed up.
What Chris means is that the document's in a different place.
Wormhole deep, not wide. Deep wormhole.
That.
Here's proof that the size of the wormhole actually does matter.
All right, Bill, you picked this interesting episode for us.
Okay, so golly gee, I haven't actually given as much thought to this as I should have prior to being put on the spot. I'm sitting over here trying to come up with clickbait titles and coming up with nothing. I'm like dead today.
Your review rating.
Yeah, I need more coffee. I think it's solid for sure. I think it might be a little more than solid though, because I mean, I think what's really good about the episode is we really get to learn a lot about the crew, and it's like we just sort of take a moment to do so. And it's nice, the things we find out. Like, we find out Janeway is not going to be bullheaded about her chief medical officer. She's going to actually look into it and think, all right, what if I do treat him like a member of my crew? What will happen? You know, and that's cool. We applaud her for that. Kes, like we said, I think Chris said it, this is the best Kepisode.
Kepisode.
There you go. It's the best Kepisode ever of Voyager. It's the best Kes episode for sure. Because you really admire her for what she did. You get to see this, and we didn't talk about it a whole lot, but I mean, a lot of this is B'Elanna and Kim, you know, going back and forth. And then that line she says at the end, like, maybe he gave the messages to the government. Maybe they'll still get delivered. She's like standing right next to Kim, who's like just dejected as all heck. And
right.
She's really being quite kind to him. She's like, you know, she's saying all that for him, for his benefit, to make him feel better.
Yeah, that's true, really, because she didn't really care.
Right. And considering her character arc, it's a real breakthrough moment in episode five, six, seven, whatever this is of the first season. So you really get a nice glimpse into what she might become as well. And it's cool that Jerry Taylor wrote it all. So I'm going to have to, you know what? I'm going to go, let's see, strong. I'm going to go to the TV. I think I'm going to give it a solid 6, and I'm on the fence about whether I give it a 6.5. I'm going to give it a 6. Yeah, it's a 6.
All right, yes.
I did
enjoy this episode. When I first saw it coming up in our list, I was thinking, I remember not much actually happening in the episode.
Right.
And then I rewatched it from when I originally watched it in the 90s. And I was pretty impressed, because we do get a lot of this character interaction and character development. Some of it's meaty, some of it's good. There's nothing really not worth it in this episode.
Right.
I mean, we didn't see much of Tuvok. He was standard Vulcan. We didn't see much of Paris. But that's okay. It's hard to have an episode where everybody takes part.
Yeah.
And I liked Kim, and I liked Kes in this episode. And given the rest of Voyager, that was a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did we even see Neelix?
No.
Nope.
That was interesting.
See?
Oh. You just take Neelix out of the deal and everybody starts acting normal. Okay. So I'm not going to give it exceptional. I mean, I really like the plot. I really like the whole time, the temporal issue that they had here, and that it was really kind of a moral choice to some extent not to send at least somebody back.
Right.
Right.
So I'm going to give it a 6. I think it's very, very solid.
I'm on board with this. No, it's good. We got good character development. There weren't really any annoying people. Sorry. I'm distracted because I can hear myself talk. So I've taken my headset out. But good, solid character development. No annoying people. I mean, Kim and Kes were useful, which was pretty darn awesome. So I think I'm going to go with a 6 as well, because it's a pretty strong episode. And I might watch it if I caught it on TV.
All right. Well, I mean, I agree with all of the stuff that you guys have said, but also because this episode is kind of like the birth of holographic sentience, right?
Yep.
I'm going to give it a 7.
Nice.
I figured you'd boost it up.
That's right. Stand up for your homies, bro.
That's right.
I don't do that for my mirror, brethren.
Not when it's a bad episode, anyway.
Yeah, well, that's very mirror of you.
Hey,
it would be very unmirror-like to give it a pity up if it's a bad episode.
All right, well, that gives this episode a 6, solid. And now on to trivia.
What was that?
Unknown.
For 100 Quatloos.
This is a test of some kind, isn't it?
Wager. 100 quatloos. 400 quatloos. 200 quatloos against.
All right, welcome to Trekno Trivia.
Trekno Trivia.
We have Bill with 200 quatloos. Chris has 588 quatloos. And Mike, 672 quatloos.
Yes.
Ooh, I think I'm catching up. I like that Bill is even.
Yeah, I know. It's a nice even number, but you know what? I'm willing to screw it up.
Good.
Let's hope you do.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, you need to get up to like 388.
Well, you know what else is an even number? 1,000.
It is. I'm working
on
that.
Oh, I thought you were going to say zero.
Oh.
Which
well,
is
technically
even,
that's not either.
Odd and everything else.
Right.
It's an axis point.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
I've brought out the book.
The book.
The book. The book of shame.
The book of shame.
Well, lately the book's been shaming itself with wrong answers.
It's only had two.
Okay, only two.
Which can
well, I'm hoping if I get something wrong.
2,500 in here.
How many?
2,500.
And how many have we asked, do you think?
I don't know.
Not anywhere close to that.
Nowhere close to that.
Well, let's see. If it was two questions per four people.
And then the whatever double.
Yeah, probably a maximum of about 120.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
Bill.
That's a pretty good ratio. Okay, I'm ready. Lay it on me.
The book has taken pity on you.
She always says that, and then it's like...
Yeah, it's like...
What is the genetic sequence?
Yeah. Is it G-A-T-T-A-A-C-C or...
A? G-A-T-B-C?
Okay. What was Sisko's favorite drink?
Wow.
Coffee? Black?
No, I'm sorry.
I actually don't know,
yeah,
so I don't. I don't feel as though the book is taking pity on me, but I'll guess from the.
How subtle is that? I think I know, Bill.
Yeah. Have you watched? I mean, I don't know. I feel like I didn't watch a whole lot of Deep Space Nine.
I did not either, but I still think I know.
All right, fine. Yeah.
Actually,
rub
I don't your think the
holographic
book
salt
on
in
Bill.
My bitter wound.
No, the book didn't take pity on Bill. The book is mocking Mike.
Yes, that's right.
Ah, that sounds more accurate.
Okay, is it A, T, B, Ractogino, C, Aldebaran Whiskey, or D, Saurian Brandy?
His favorite drink?
Yes.
Yeah.
By that,
I don't know. I'm going with Ractogino. Saurian Brandy.
Wait, it was not Ractogino?
It says Saurian Brandy.
Wow.
Brandy.
I would have got it wrong.
And
nice.
If I'd had two chances at it, I would have gotten it. Because I heard Saurian Brandy, and I said, that sounds familiar. But he was always drinking Ractogino's.
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
I thought it was coffee, though. I thought he was coffee and Dax was Ractogino. And I was like, all right, well, it's got to be Ractogino. But no. So it didn't say favorite, you know... beverage to imbibe upon. So I thought, well, it must be the one he drinks all the time. Anyway, I should just shut up. Take my lick.
Hey, you know what? If anyone makes the case, we can always fix it. All right, Chris.
Oh, so that's like if everyone claps loud enough, Tinker Bell will come back to life.
Right.
Start clapping, people. Tinker Bell needs to fly again.
Not quite.
I mean, unless there's specifically an episode where he says, Saurian Brandy, that's my favorite drink, which
right.
could be.
Right.
Yes.
I like the way he goes after the blood wine when he impersonates the Klingon.
Okay, Chris.
Yep.
What protected Spock from being blinded by a medical experiment during the mission to Denova?
His inner eyelid. which sounds kind of psychic.
Wow.
But it's not.
It's actually an inner eyelid.
Well, does his third eye have an inner eyelid as well?
Yay!
Wow.
You knew that one, Mike.
Chris is on a roll. I did.
Yeah, I knew that one, too.
Right.
So the book is mocking us both.
Yep.
Yeah, but it really hates Mike.
We all know this.
It's just jealous of you.
It's computer versus computer.
Yeah. Right, and it knows it's not as evolved as you, and it's,
that's right.
It's bitter.
Yes. All right, Mike. Mike.
Yes.
Who told a security guard not to call him Tiny?
Oh, come on, Mike.
Worf?
No.
Not to call him Tiny.
Was it A, Sulu, B, Chekhov, C, Kirk, or D, McCoy?
I think Mike realized it.
Yeah.
So who was it?
Sulu. Dang it.
Now you realize you should have gotten it.
Yep.
I like the little noises it makes.
Sulu?
Yes. Tiny noises.
Oh my. Never call me Tiny. Sorry. Couldn't resist. Guy has a great voice. It's just a beautiful voice.
Yes. Bill.
Yes.
Which of Picard's closest friends was killed after revealing his fears to Picard about a Starfleet conspiracy?
Oh, man.
A good episode.
Great episode. Real standout from the early days. Admiral Cartwright.
Not even one of the choice.
Wow. He must have been really old.
I forget who that is. It's just a name popped in my head.
It was like from Star Trek 5 or something.
Oh.
Not 5.
6.
Oh, wait. Yeah, 6.
He was the bad guy.
Yeah.
They're animals, Jem. They deserve to die.
Yeah, he doesn't really strike me as somebody that Picard would be best friends with.
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
Unless he subscribes to keep your enemies closer.
Right.
Okay, was it A, Jack Crusher, B, Trila Scott, C, Gregory Quinn, or D, Walker Keel?
All right. Give me, I remember A is Jack Crusher. Who was B?
Trila Scott.
And then it was Quinn?
Gregory Quinn.
And then
Walker Keel.
Wow, I have no idea. I'm going with...
Go with your gut.
Quinn. Going with C, Mike.
Wow.
Wish me luck, buddy.
Brave.
Yeah.
No, it was Walker Keel.
Walker Keel.
Dang.
It's been a long time since I've seen that episode.
It's been a long time since I saw it as well, for sure. I'm sure I saw it broadcast in repeats. In the 90s. Walker Keel. I guess that's better than Quinn. You're writing for, you know, Patrick Stewart.
I don't like this question.
What?
Chris, what cosmic entity is Guinan less than fond of, having met him several centuries ago?
Crying out loud. You have got to be kidding me.
No.
All right. Hold on. Q. Man, too bad that wasn't the daily double or fortnightly double, because we would have had score inflation.
Yes, right. We would have.
Yeah, everybody. Well, you know, it would have just been a double. Everybody would have doubled their score. So we'd be just as far apart, just with twice as money as Quatloos, which I could use the Quatloos. You know, I could use the Quatloos. I'm saving up for something.
I think.
What were the other answers?
Yeah, what were the choices? That must have been pretty funny.
A was Traveler. B was Q. C was Trelane.
Nice.
And D was Apollo.
Wow.
Those are good choices.
Yeah, they are.
All kind of annoying.
I would just like to point out that I think the book may be showing favoritism because that's two episodes in a row where Chris got the 2 points on all the questions.
I don't think I got it last time.
I'm the scorekeeper. I'm looking right at it.
And he's the ship's computer. I think he knows exactly what you did.
Yep.
I just take him as it does it.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, you're married to him. Does he have access to the book in your off hours?
No.
Maybe some reprogramming could have happened?
No, wait. No. Reprogramming. Because, yeah, he's getting softball questions. It's not like he's studying up.
Right.
No.
Okay.
Okay, Mike.
Yep.
What caused Seven to exhibit personalities of assimilated victims?
Her implant.
Nice.
Well, the answer was as simple as her implant.
Well, it's a damaged Borg vinculum, which is her implant.
Which is her implant.
Yeah. Damaged implant.
All right.
Walker Keel, huh? Man.
All right.
You even really liked that episode.
Fortnightly done.
Yeah, but it's been... I mean, literally, probably. See, that's what our language has come to. It's like, yeah, no, and literally, probably. It's probably been like 20-something years since I saw that. Because I haven't rewatched it on Netflix or anything. So I might have to.
I figuratively hate people that use literally wrong.
Yeah.
I saw that on a t-shirt once.
Okay, Fortnightly Double.
Yes.
Yay.
All right, crossing fingers.
Write your wager down as well as your guess.
Oh, and I have to, how do I do this? Do I do it in Morse code?
Message her.
Well, we'll see who's answering.
Yeah.
Okay.
If no one else is doing it and you are, then you can just say it. If everyone else is doing it or anyone else.
We can just show ours first and then you can say it.
Well, no. I would say, no, the opposite.
You'd have to say it first.
And then you show yours.
Right.
Otherwise, you have I'll to have yours folded so right. I can see
it, so you can't change it.
Yes.
Not that I don't believe any of you.
No, you don't. You don't trust
get this. Oh, no. Not about cheating. I don't believe any of you will get this.
Oh, good.
Oh, even better.
How did Keiko know the recording of her husband's death was a fake in Armageddon Game?
I can only answer that in broad strokes. I couldn't give you anything specific. I know there was something about it.
I can only see her holding up a little chip saying, "It's a fake!"
Chris says nope. No.
Nah, I don't know.
I can't be specific enough to risk any Quatloos. Maybe if I'd gotten some in the last week or two.
Yell at the book. The book knows all, except those two questions. Okay, so this becomes our listener question. So listeners, send me a private message on our forums, a direct message on Twitter, or email me at carrie@technologic.com, and let me know how Keiko knew the recording of her husband's death was a fake in the episode Armageddon Game. If you get it right, you can get 2 Quatloos.
What's wrong?
I have to word Quatloos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got some.
Well, I don't really like that part.
Yeah, no one should Quatloos.
You can't ignore it, though.
Okay, so in TNL 149, we asked which two actors from Deep Space Nine were married and had a child together. And this was not a crew question.
No, it was not.
Because all of you would have answered it correctly. The answer, of course, is Nana Visitor and Alexander Siddig. So answering it correctly are Cindy, Dr. Brian, Freefaller 003, Jay from Brazil, Max Simmons, MLV, Omega 47, Ryan's, and I'm not sure if it's Ryan DS or Ryan's. And I can't put the D sound in there. I'm sorry. Scarlet Phantom, Thalesa, and yet another Matt. All of them answer correctly. And Cindy actually said that the relationship kind of became an inside joke. So in the Lakshwana episode, Fascination, Kira and Bashir shared an intimate moment together. And then in the episode where Bashir beams the fetus from Keiko's womb to Kira's, she tells him directly that her new condition was his fault.
Nice.
Yeah, that's really good.
And this was the first time that Star Trek wrote an actress's pregnancy into the storyline.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because remember Crusher and her giant lab coats.
Right. Could you paste those in there for me, Carrie?
Yes.
Her giant lab coats?
Yeah, yes. When she was pregnant.
I love giant lab coats. I like to make forts out of them.
Giant lab coats, the band.
I know a guy whose band plays in lab coats. They played at the Loft once.
What's the band name?
I can't remember. They're going to hate me for that. No, it's called Love Tester.
Okay.
Love Tester. And they're actually back on the scene. They're about to play in Asbury Park.
Well, because I was going to say, there's a band that's made up of scientists.
Aren't they called We Are Scientists?
No, they're the Spasmatics.
Ah.
Oh, I've seen them. They played the Houston Zombie Festival.
Yeah, they're pretty
awesome. Zombie Walk. They were good.
They're very good.
Sweet.
So congratulations to all of you on a Quatloo.
Yay, Quatloos.
Cool Quatloos. Love
Quatloos.
Makes the world go round.
Well.
All right. I'd like to give my annual shout out. Of course, I don't actually mean that annually. To Christian1313 for technologicanalyzer.justplainapps.com for analyzing all of our scores. Everything you want to know about Technologic statistically is there. All right, Bill, you up next?
Yeah, and for anyone who might be anywhere near Hudson County, New Jersey, Nipsey's got a couple of we're doing our little Hoboken Park tour, Sinatra Park, with another band I play in called Davey and the Trainwreck on August 7th, and then the Lackawanna Music Festival on Pier A in Hoboken on August 23rd. So if anyone's around, please come see us.
Perfect. I wish I was.
The Sinatra Park Show is 100% free from 7 to 9.
Nice. Just go ahead and tip Bill.
Yeah, right. We should put a hat out. Thanks, City of Hoboken. We got cat right. fare.
Thank you for listening. Oh, and you know what? We love feedback. In fact, we read, listen to, and discuss our feedback in the Listening Post podcast, which was released sometime in the past. You can give us feedback by giving us a nice iTunes review, by emailing us at feedback@technologic.com. You can tweet us at Technologic. We have a Facebook and Google Plus account. And we have a Technologic forum at technologic.com. So join our discussions and let us know what you think. Hey, Carrie, what are we reviewing next time?
The next episode, we get to see Chris's pick of the Enterprise episode, The Observer Effect.
Hey, you guys know what that one is about?
Isn't that the Voyager one that we reviewed for our very first one?
It's an Enterprise episode, it says.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, what's it about?
Is this the one where Enterprise went and observed people doing stuff to the crew of Voyager?
Nope, this one has Organians in it.
Ooh.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, what season is it from?
Fourth season, I think.
Oh, my favorite season.
I think so. Well, we'll find out.
can I just say,
It's been a long road getting from there to here.
I'm so excited.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I got a new phone and I can wait. Shut up. This has to do with that song. There's a reason. So I got a new phone and I used to have the entire Enterprise theme song as my ringtone. Which
offends Bill.
The problem is no one calls and it doesn't ring long enough to really like go through the whole song.
Right.
Oh, that sounds like a huge problem.
It is. Because I love that song. So my new phone has a ringtone trimmer program built in. So when you pick a ringtone and you pick a music file, you can trim it right there.
Nice.
So now I just have the uplifting chorus of that song. Don't be a hater.
I've got faith.
Well, until then, on behalf of everyone here at TechLogic, love long and prosper, and we'll try and sedate.
Yes.
There is, of course, a 75% chance that the wormhole will not lead to bloopers. Very true, but you could also say there's a 1 in 4 chance it will. Those aren't bad odds.
We didn't even talk about that.
No, we didn't. That's probably
like the
good.
Janeway odds ever.
I know.
Yeah.
25%?
Good enough for me. Let's do it. Let's put everyone at risk.
It's kind of foreshadowing.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
This is Technologic number
150.
Is that the right start date?
Let me check that date now. What the heck? I thought I did this.
Seems to be like a lag in the Moogle software.
Yeah.
I thought you'd have all those dates auto update, man. Har, har, har.
I really don't want you to try and fly the ship through a 30-centimeter... centimeteor.
Centimeteor. that's just another word for tiny meteors.
That's right. Here we go.
Hey,
we're good.
Mike, just double check your mic real quick.
No. Oh, am I coming through the wrong one?
I'm just not sure.
You sound like you're coming through the right one.
Okay. Sorry.
It might have been just a little far away.
Yeah, that might have been what it was.
Yeah, no, it's the right one.
Did you see how he adjusted down just slightly?
Yeah. Yeah, it was now.
It was by your forehead.
Yeah. I don't normally speak out of there, but I can if we need to.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. You can speak out of there. You can even create a new orifice if you need to.
All right. The story
is going to get a blowhole? Ensign Kim detects a wormhole that the crew leads to the Alpha Quadrant. Ensign Kim detects... He breaks communication and runs tests while Voyager hits redial. Sorry.
It's okay.
The face that the captain made when she's like. There we go. It stopped.
I didn't do anything.
Yeah. You were looking at something wrong.
I sat back in my chair.
I think it would have been cool if he had lived. And it would have been really cool if...
If the tank would actually hit that other tank. And
that does sound like that Atari game.
Yeah.
Oh, that time leaning back in my chair didn't help.
That's when I'm getting a text or something.
Oh!
It's a date.
Oh, it's the cellular... It's the microwaves coming in and your cellular radio, making noise.
Oh, wait, what if you put it in airplane mode?
I just watched that episode. I'm going back through from the beginning.
Oh, okay. And, now it's in airplane mode.
There we go.
Okay.
And it kind of cut off that sound right in the middle, so that might have been it.
It's like old-fashioned computers you see in sci-fi.
Yeah.
It's computing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, this is one Chris already had.
And Carrie knew it.
Yep. Well, she marked
it. Because I circled the answer. Oh, I'm so horrible. Sorry.
Oh.
Oh, wait. Guess what? It was blank. next week, or not next week.